Welcome to The Wheel Reads, a Wheel of Time podcast. Your hosts are Alan, Chris, and Ian. This podcast is safe for first-time readers with no spoilers. This week, we'll be covering chapters 13 and 14 of A Crown of Swords, The Bowl of Winds, and White Plumes. Enjoy!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, welcome back to The Wheel Reads for episode 7 of season 7. Yay.
7, 7.
7 and 7. Yeah. So, that's a good drink. 7 and 7. Actually, it's not that great of a drink, but I used to drink them back in the day.
It's fun to say.
It's fun to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's...
It's a phenomenal drink.
Okay, it's phenomenal. There you go. Secret 7's okay. It's not my favorite.
But I'm talking about Peerless.
Oh, Peerless.
It's
oh.
A bourbon. It's great.
Okay. Have to check it out. So no new patrons this week. As far as other announcements goes, we do have to do a live reaction at some point. I actually had patrons say, are you guys going to do one for Crown of Swords? I'm like, yes, we will. We have to come to a good chapter, so we're getting through the minutia first. Maybe soon I'll try to find a good chapter for us to do one, schedule it at some point. Also, announcement, next week we will not be recording. If you watch us live on our normal Tuesday time, we're gonna switch things up a bit, and it's gonna be on Monday, and it's gonna be at 10 p.m so a little bit later in the evening and on a Monday. So I'll send out tons of notifications. We have guests, and that's when they can come. So Monday night, next Monday at 10 p.m. If you're listening to this on the podcast,
you said this twice for our benefit, you guys.
We've already recorded.
He's talking to Chris and me because Mondays we like, y'all ready? I'm going to be like, ready for what?
Ready for what? I'm going exactly. In my phone and updating it now.
Yeah, so that's next week, a little bit different. And then not that weekend, but the following weekend of February is going to be Water Fortune. We had contestants lined up for that, so that's going to be fun. It's going to be a good old time. So that's going to be, I guess, what is that, February, like 11th or something like that? I think. Sounds right. Yeah, February 11th. I got it right the first time. Yeah, so February. Yeah, it's 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Hal, just to clarify that for next week. Yeah, it's going to be a little late. We're gonna have a little bit.
Yeah, we're on Eastern Standard Time here. We're on the East Coast.
Yeah, we're all East Coasters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's all it for announcements for right now. Look forward to more giveaways coming next week as well, as we get into the February month. But for right now, that's get everything out. I think we're good. So, I was gonna read this too. Let me go find it. I did get another New Year's resolution, even though we already gave an award out for it. I did get another New Year's resolution, so I figured I would read that if I can find it. You know, I should have had these things pulled up beforehand, you know?
Peace on earth and goodwill toward men.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. How'd you know? It was pretty much just saying, like, they want to... Oh, here it is. My New Year's resolution is to keep being a badass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did I send that one in?
His name is Mike. And I said, keep it up. We are all rooting for your continued badassery. So yes. Thank you. And then we got someone emailed us a review as well, saying they just found us and they love us. So
what?
Please email me. I respond to these emails, and I do appreciate them.
We like the review?
Well, this was an email. This was an email review. So I just want to reach out to you guys saying you are the most entertaining podcast I've ever listened to.
Hey.
Yeah. So... That's from Shelby. So thank you, Shelby.
Thank you, Shelby. We have fun with it.
Yeah. So that's that. Appreciate that kind of stuff. So keep sending me stuff. I like it when you guys send me emails. I respond. I'll send one to Ian and Chris too. Someone did one on Twitter the other day, and I took screenshots of Ian and Chris. So
yeah,
that's great.
We appreciate that stuff. It makes me feel good. Gives me all the warm fuzzies inside. Anyways, it makes me think I'm actually doing something in my life. onward to personal life. Yeah, what's going on in personal life? Getting ready to go to Florida. That's next week. Oh, yeah. So next Thursday, not this Thursday, not 2 days, but next Thursday I'm flying to Florida. So going to be there for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So 4 days in Florida. Going to visit my brother, who's been on the podcast before. So haven't seen him in over a year. So actually, no, I saw him last summer. So it hasn't been quite over a year, but months. So we're going to go see him. It will be good. And that's all I got.
Are you going to do Busch Gardens while you're down there?
We're thinking about Legoland. Well, we might do Busch Gardens. I'm not sure.
Legoland's neat. Yeah. Their Busch Gardens is still very cool for the little kids. They got all the animals and the giraffes, and the feeding giraffes is fun. And
Yeah.
But Legoland is awesome.
Kids are really into Legos right now. Yeah. So we'll see. Awesome. We might do something like that. We might just hang out with Hunter and
yeah.
Their nephew Thomas. So we'll see. We kind of play it by ear. I don't really have much of plans. And that's all I got. Really, I'm trying to plan my 40th birthday party. Yeah, I'm turning 40.
Getting old.
I know. it's coming up soon. Coming up fast, in a hurry. Ian gets it before I do, but trying to plan it. So
I don't want to talk about it.
Coming up with some ideas on what to do.
But, you look so good for 40.
I hope I don't die.
Alan, you do too.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I don't try.
At 38, I looked really good. Like, all vanity intended. At 38, I look really good. Between 38 and now, I fell apart. I'm super frumpy. I have soft edges. There's no definition, no chisel, no, everything's frumpy. Everything's, I gotta do something about that.
So some women like a little extra fluff.
No, hey, look, my woman's not complaining. We're surviving the winter just fine. Like, the bed is warm.
And I also got this new T-shirt that I really, really love. But
and you may ask yourself.
And you may ask yourself. Says, how did I get here? Oh my God, what have I done? So if you know, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. If you listen to great music from the 80s.
I have it stuck in my head now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself.
So
what's going on with you?
Chris, if you have a lot to say tonight, you're in luck. You're going to have the floor because I'm just kind of, you know, I'm in that routine doing the work thing. I'm a little less disgruntled than I have been. I guess I'm slowly getting used to it. And I'm still a little mad that I'm getting used to it, but whatever, getting used to it. And yeah, work and eating dinner and playing a little bass or guitar with the kids and going to bed. That's it. That's my life.
I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm loving it. I got good company either way. The people at work are awesome. And obviously the people at home, I love them to death. They're good people. So yeah, I'm very blessed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of in the same boat, like, you know, still going through training at work, and this is my last week, so I'll be an official full-time relationship banker at Truist next week, which is cool, I guess. a lot of regulations I need to go back and reread so I don't do something stupid and get myself fired, but
And right when you got them all down pat, Congress will pass a law, the regulations will change.
Exactly. That's what I'm learning real quick. But there's this thing called Acadia that has all the documents I ever will want to read and 20 billion more. So
yeah.
You have to deal with all the crazy people coming in, asking all sorts of weird requests that you cannot honor. And
are you gonna dabble in mortgages at all?
400 and you want a home mortgage.
Right.
Do you have a large cash down payment?
do you have a father that'll co-sign with really good credit? Like, what are you bringing to the table? But mortgages is the worst. You, like, especially the last couple years, you'll be in underwriting and regulations will change and the requirements will change.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's fun if you enjoy that.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see.
You got to dip, you got to dive.
I've been enjoying the Telluride line. Like, I like being back there with the money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm cross-trained to do teller work.
Okay.
And they want a banker back on the teller line. So I'm trying to angle myself to be that banker back on the teller line. That way I could just be busy all day and get paid more than the tellers. So
it's a nice little niche.
I mean, they got raised to $22 an hour, so they're not making little to nothing. So they went from making 16 to 22. So that's a lot more money for them. But again, I'll be a banker, making banker money, working the total line. So.
It's a different world.
Yeah, I mean,
we did have
a lot of small branches. They even have sometimes have the branch manager have a drawer. So even the branch manager get on there sometimes. But
Truist no longer allow a branch leader to have a drawer. They have an operations manager or leader that does that. So,
is there a practical reason for that, or is that like just a point of pride? They're like, we finally rose to the level. We ain't gonna have our branch managers having drawers. Heck no.
They split the bank, so you have an operations manager or leader that's in charge of your tellers. They have a branch leader that's in charge of the bankers, and they come together to make decisions.
Yeah, they starting to grow. That's it. It's like cellular division. They just
Is that meiosis or mitosis? I always get those mixed up. Meiosis. We'll go with something. That. Mm-hmm. But we did do something really cool on Friday night. So I saw something on Axios Charlotte talking about free glass blowing, and I'm like, huh, okay. And then Chanel saw it too, and she's like, hey, we should go see this. And I'm like, all right, well, let's do it. Mm. So we went out and we watched these guys make a glass blown vase. It was like an hour and a half of watching men like run around trying not to burn themselves, molding glass. And I've done it, you know, Chrysler Museum, they do little bulbs and stuff, but this was like a $4,000 vase that they were creating. So it was really fun to watch, to feel the stress and to see the tension and, you know, just to be involved in that process. We had some really good food after that, and then went Saturday and celebrated a cousin's birthday, and Sunday we just kind of chilled. So kind of at that point, I was talking to a friend about it. I was like, man, I used to have so much energy and I used to like do so many things, and I think I'm like in that season now where I just don't have as much to keep me busy. So I don't have as much energy, I don't have as much, you know. He's like, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it, and you're starting to settle.
That's true.
And I'm like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with this. I'm kind of having that internal struggle of what I've known for 34 years versus what the last year has been. And so trying to come to terms with that. I don't know if anybody else has ever felt that way, but, you know, going from that survivalship mode to I could actually kind of be at peace, you know, everything else barred, you know, still got bills to pay, still have, you know, leftover finances to catch up on, but
yeah, you can't stop grinding, but it's a little less stressful. There's moments of, I could sit here and chill.
Yeah.
I don't have to keep doing 16 different things. Exactly. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy it a little bit. But like you said, if you don't use it, you lose it. That's a little bit what I'm struggling with. And, you know, the back adds to that, but there's still things I can do. So I need to start being intentional about getting out, doing stuff, being active and moving. And I don't have to grind and make more money, but I still need to do stuff. I need to exist other than just chilling on my couch, you know?
Yeah. All right. You guys ready?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's jump right in.
Yeah. These are fun ones.
Yeah. We'll jump right in. So chapter 13. The Bowl of Winds. And I know we've gotten away to talk about chapter icons, but this one stuck out. I know you guys are listening, but I wish I could share that. Let me see if I can figure out a way to share.
I'm sure there's a way.
There you go. Looks like two doves with a star.
It's supposed to be two gulls, and it reminded me of let me see if I can share my screen. Share screen, window. No, entire screen. Okay, we're gonna do weird shit for a second.
It's about to get weird.
It's about to get weird. All right, boom. All right. It reminded me of this memorial, not the destroyed one.
It does look a lot like that.
Oh yeah. Wow. Wait, where's that?
That is the Cape Horn Memorial. At the tip of South America.
How long has that been there?
For about, I want to say 40 or 50 years now.
So it really could be that.
And inscribed on it is the name of every sailor that's lost their life trying to round Cape Horn, at least that we know of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's still on my to-do list. Do you want to get on that?
To make the list?
Or no, to round Cape Horn.
Yes. That's how Ian wants to go.
Look, if I get diagnosed with stage four, that's exactly the list I'm going for. I'm just going to get on a little dinghy all by myself. I could try and take a laser around Cape Horn. I want to do it on a monohull somewhere, you know, between a 40 and 55 footer. That's what I'm saying. I want to be safe-ish, but I want to have to work. Like, there's no relaxing. We're just going to cruise around. That range, 40 to 55 going around the horn. Yeah. It takes effort to live.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, when you have 100-foot waves and it blows like crazy and there's ice everywhere.
You got to hit it just right.
Yeah. Anyway, so so a bowl of winds. Talking about the winds, Cape Horn has lots of it. So
can you tell me why for this chapter we didn't have some of our 420 friendly friends on with us?
Oh yeah, we should.
I feel like that's the perfect chapter title.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it necessarily relates to the chapter, but come on.
There is a podcast called The Weed of Time.
I'm sure they got excited about this one.
I'm sure they did. And they smoke a lot of weed and then record a podcast.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, it's interesting.
All right. Well, let's hit it.
So anyway, Avienda and others are going to visit Seafolk. So that's where we are. We're back in Ebodar. Avienda, Elaine, Brigitte, and Nynaeve are on their way down to the docks to go visit the sea folk. And yeah, it's Avienda's really bothered by all the water, and just by wetlanders in general, by all of it.
Yeah, she's still very overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And like doubly like disgusted at the existence of a river that is so salty you can't drink it. She's like, what the hell is the point of that? Which I don't know. We've always grown, again, where we grew up, we're all around brackish and salt water. So you don't think about it.
Nope.
But yeah, there's gigantic bodies of water.
You know, as a kid, I never really realized never paid attention to the fact that like you had salt water and fresh water. I was like, there's water all over the place. And then people, oh no, we could run out of fresh water. I'm like, huh? It's everywhere.
Right.
How can we I look outside and all I see is water.
Yeah, the ocean's like one of the biggest deserts in the world. I mean, you're in the middle of the ocean, you're surrounded by nothing drinkable.
Yeah.
Now you can use reverse osmosis and pull the,
if you have the right equipment. Yeah, sure.
So I mean, you know, IVN is only partially right. Like, I'm sure that there's some type of Aes Sedai technique to separate water from the salt.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, you can make a still. Or you can
just boil it.
Yeah, you can make a. You can't boil salt water. That, I mean, we can boil it into a still and make a still or a drip. Yeah, the problem is you also leach out all the minerals and other things into it. And eventually, if you drink distilled water too much, it'll eventually start to leach the metals out of your body as well. The water will, and it'll actually kill you in the long run. And for short term, yes, it will hydrate you and keep you alive.
Yeah.
For months and months and months, drinking only distilled water can kill you.
Yeah. That's that whole, what's the stupid term? It won't come to me right now, but it will later.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I just took a moment to think about that. She comes from a place, raised in a place where water is scarce and rare.
Sure.
So every drop of it is like, hey, don't waste. This is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's in places where there's giant bodies of water, but undrinkable. And it, you know, she's just trying to process that. Not really significant to this part of the chapter, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's also like a lot of the world that has struggles with clean.
Osmosis. That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah. A lot of parts of the world struggle with clean, drinkable, potable water. And, I know for a fact that a lot of people are really just baffled by the fact that you know, in a lot of Western countries, even toilet water is potable water, drinkable water. And like, pee. And I mean, it's like 4th of July. I don't know what they're going to do next year. Like, are they going to have the egg toss still? Like, could you imagine nowadays? Like someone tossing an egg, like,
I would win that. I ain't dropping no egg.
That shit's expensive.
Yeah.
I still eat six a day.
Well, I know all the crazy chicken ladies in my neighborhood, so I get free eggs.
I was about to say, I'm sure you get free eggs out there.
Yeah, we get free eggs. But anyway, we get free eggs. We all the crazy chicken ladies.
Water everywhere and not a drop to drink.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here we go. And at some point they start talking with Elaine about being near sisters, almost first sisters, or at least start thinking about that, you know, but they still need to figure out what this mid girl is all about. But you know, Elaine and Aviander are like, yeah, we're good. We're good with Rand. You can share them. This mid girl. I don't know.
But isn't this an Aviander perspective?
Yes.
So I always remind myself of that. And I wonder what the setup is here. So in her mind, she's thinking about how, like, they're going through this process of becoming near sisters and they're acting that way, whatever. But how much of this is she communicating to Elaine? So is Elaine seeing it the same way? Is this like a little setup to Aviander thinking they're more than they are? Like, is it going to come to head at some point? At least here, it didn't say that they were hashing that out and actually communicating really well. All of this was more in Avienda's head, assuming that, you know, they're progressing to near sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I hear you and I agree with you on that. You can tell that Avienda's definitely given more consideration or given a lot of consideration to this, but she's also Aes Sedai. Aiel. So her level of attentiveness is much higher. She's much more acute and really trying to pick up on everything that Elaine is putting down. Like, she's even starting to recognize, even in the smallest motions, what her emotions are. So sure. Like, she is fully invested in this. So hopefully Elaine is returning the same favor. And I think as we read along, you kind of get a glimpse of it, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then as they're walking around, they're also talking about how to find the bull winds. And Aviander suggests that maybe Matt, you know, since it's to Viren, maybe he can do it. And Aviander's just like, yeah. Matt.
Okay. I'll comment on this, but we got to go back to what I was just saying for a second, because it was a setup. So I could say this. Where I see it going is there's to be some conversation where they're both talking about what, you know, well, I guess we just, this is what we're going to have to do. And Aviander's like, yeah, I know what we got to do. And Elaine's like, yeah, I know what we got to do. And so like Aviander just starts taking her clothes off and leans in to start making out with Elaine. And Elaine's like, no, I thought we were going to flip a coin to see who gets ran. What the hell is this? Like, that's what I was thinking about. Had them, they're like, they're going down the same path, but like not on the same page.
Definitely. 100%.
And then we're still all underestimating Matt.
Especially Nynaeve. She's just,
yeah. Well, they're all kind of underestimating him for different reasons. Nynaeve, I don't know completely what her hang up is. Cause her and Egwene, we could say the same thing. Like, well, from the same village, and Matt was Matt. So that's the only Matt they know. I think Nynaeve might have a different level of what she knows about him in his situation, having been the wisdom, but she, definitely seems to be not a fan of Matt in a position of authority, or that she just can't believe that he could do anything significant. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Avienda seems like a little bit of a man hater right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'd have to think on it. I don't know if she's always been that way.
It's more of a wetlander hater
thing. I was going to say, definitely a wetlander. Even in the book, like, we're seeing, again, her perspective. This is the first time we really dive into the mind of an Aiel. And she's talking about having to get accustomed to something as simple as saying a first name only.
Right.
And how that seems like a honey name, which is something they only use, like, with people they're very intimate with. And the only person she's been intimate with is Rand, and she doesn't even call him that way. So we're right. Really getting her perspective. And that kind of leads us right into the whole conversation or idea of not allowing herself to be seen as weak and not mm-hmm. giving in to her seasickness and the motion of the boat. And mm-hmm. then it also takes us into her feelings, which is right on par with what a Armelin probably should be thinking when it comes to Nicola and Arena. And she, mm-hmm. I mean, very ideal, like their trouble, get rid of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
eliminate the threat.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's actually Elaine in the situation that comes to Matt's defense, and it's like, yeah, I think it's actually a good idea. Let's get Matt to do it. So of course they send Brigitte to go tell, not ask, to tell Matt to help him.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a conversation about Marigan,
mm-hmm.
and how mm-hmm. everybody's like, well, fretting over her is not going to do us any good. And then Avian is like, if a shadow soul had me marked, I think I'd be a little freaked out. So, I mean, again, here we don't have Aiel outright talking about their emotions and their almost fears, if you want to call it that. But here she is kind of being outright about it in her own mind, at least. And I think that type of context would give a little bit of incentive for the others to really think on it if she did verbalize it. But again, we know the communication in this great mm-hmm. book.
Yeah.
It is mm-hmm. so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was my point earlier. I still have to constantly go back and either re-listen or reread and answer the question, did they say that out loud or was that in their head? Because it totally changes how you view the big picture of what's happening in a situation. And there's some times where, like, I'll go back and they actually say it out loud and I'm like, oh shit, that's amazing. And then sometimes I go back and I was like, they only said it in their head. I'm like, why the fuck didn't you say that out loud?
Like, that happens to me all the time. I mean, I'm sitting there like, and I say something, I'm like, shit, did I say that out loud? I was supposed to be in my head. I am so sorry, guys.
Or how about with the misses and like you swear you answered, but they're like, you just sat there and didn't say anything. And then you think about it and you're like, no, I could have just said that in my head. That's entirely possible. But I thought I said it. No, I probably just had that conversation with myself. I'm sorry.
Yep. All the time. I do it all the time. All the time. And it gets done to me all the time.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's just life.
Yeah. Anywho. Yeah. Well, that's what's great about these books. It can be frustrating, but when you think about it, that's how we do.
Yeah, my wife does that to me almost on a weekly basis. Like, yeah, we're going over to blah blah's house tomorrow. He goes, I didn't know this. He goes, I told you last week. I was like, did you? She's like, yeah, I might not have.
Oh, that's too funny. Yep.
Yeah. I swear I told you. I do the same thing back. I think it's just human nature. Yeah. So anything from all this, you know, obviously there's a couple of jokes going around that Avian thinks is funny, but it's not really supposed to be funny. that whole scene and just tension, or not necessarily tension, just, you know, Elaine mentions Rand, for example, and Avian is just confused by all of it. It's just, there's a lot of culture clashing here, and it's very obvious just between the Aiel culture and the Wetlander culture.
Yeah. I just think it's neat getting in Avienda's head. We've mm-hmm. had a lot of other people getting into Aiel culture and just looking silly and not knowing what they're doing and feeling confused. Rand and Egwene mm-hmm. both, and others. We haven't had a whole lot, and we've asked for it, a whole lot of inside the head or perspective of the Aiel. I still want to mm-hmm. get in some of the wise ones' heads for some of these scenes, but I enjoyed getting in Avienda's head a little bit, and a reminder mm-hmm. that as confident as they act, and when we see them from somebody else's point of view, they seem like these badass confident, like they always know what they're doing sort of thing, but she's second guessing a lot.
Sure.
Inside of her head.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like that in life. I mean, a lot of people put on that front. I mean, I remember as a kid looking up to my parents that they had their shit together.
They know everything. You know?
They knew everything and they had their shit together. And then I grew up and I'm the same age, if not older than my parents were. And I'm like, right. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I bring it to my dad. I'm like, you guys had, he's like, we didn't know. Like, we were winging it.
He's like, we just made it look real good.
I was like, man.
Yeah, cat sleeping back there. That was us making it look good.
There were nights we would literally flip a coin and figure out what the hell we were going to do. We narrowed it down to two choices and option B.
Pretty much. So then we get to the sea folks. So anything before we get to the, down to the docks? Or to the plank or whatever.
Okay. Nah, not really.
So we get down there and there's some men that are boarding the ship and pulling up the gangway, I guess, or whatever. And they come up and they're like, we need to board the ship. And they're like, the fuck you are. Pretty much.
Wait, hold on. There was one more thing I want to bring up.
Oh, okay.
The idea that Matt recognizes Brigitte.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm assuming this is just one of his past memories of
her. That's next chapter, though, isn't it?
No,
the sea folk lady does, but only because of her response. That's later. That's later in this chapter.
No,
I think.
No.
But this Matt,
chapter two,
yeah,
Brigitte, he can't have recognized you. If he had, he would have said something by now.
Yeah,
but they don't know what Matt's going through.
Yeah. No, they have no idea.
So they assume there's no way he can know.
Correct, but he knows.
Right,
kind of, sort of.
It's slowly coming together.
Now, see, this is kind of different than what Rand is going through. Rand is meant to, like, literally having another person within his body. Matt, on the other hand, is just getting flashes of the memories of another person or people.
Mm-hmm. Or, again, because of what he asked for, he's getting all of his memories back. He's remembering everything he forgot. What was it that he asked for? Do y'all remember?
No more holes in his memory.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To, like, get right.
And that helps out next chapter. Anyway, continuing.
Yeah. So the men refuse them at first. And then Elaine tells them that they know Windfinders and they know what you guys can do. So let us on board. Like, kind of on the nose, dude. Like, chill with the secret code shit.
People might be listening. The fish are jumping, bitch. Be quiet.
Chill with the secret code shit, man.
Yeah.
Keep it down.
When I get their attention, you would have just done the handshake and we'd have been like, all right, like,
yeah, come on, yeah, it's never a good idea to call people out on like secrets, like,
yeah,
just that's the way they get on board.
The first hint that they at least try to be very secretive about who they are and what they do, and they're very mm-hmm. closed off to letting other people in,
right?
Which we kind of knew before, but for these chapters, there's one and there's more to come.
Yeah. So they do finally get on board. They put like a little, I guess, like they don't even lower the gangway. They just like,
let's not breeze over that initial sure. like moment though. You have our friend Nynaeve is just like, you earring buffoon. That's a great way to start a conversation. I was looking for the direct quote because I remember hearing it and I was like, Why does she have to be so aggressive? She can't even use her power outright. Like, it'd be different if she could just like use the air to make her lift herself up onto the boat and then, you know, pull out the earrings with the one power and then, you know, straighten them out, make them darts or something, dart into the guy. Like, that's what I would do. All she can do is insult people.
Be aggressive.
Yeah. I'll open with, I still really like Nynaeve as a character. For all you Nynaeve lovers out there. And then I also have to say, there's been plenty of moments where she just annoys the living shit out of me.
It questions me what Lan sees in her sometimes.
Yeah, even I'm that. Like, Lan, oh. God,
you could do so much better.
It's just
Nynaeve. I mean, we don't know Nynaeve. What's coming in the future books, but bro, you could do so much better.
Yeah.
I think he likes the little, you know, beatings and the being taught down to, it just kind of fuels his fire, but she's just like, we are not after your gift of passage, so it doesn't matter whether you refuse us, refuse it to Aes Sedai, you let down this ladder instantly. And they're like, and then Elaine's like, hey, I'm kind of a queen and we know about your wayfinders. And so that's really Nynaeve is gonna get them in some big trouble soon. I could feel it.
But then there's also advantage sometimes of having the good cop, bad cop thing. The balance between Nynaeve and Elaine here is very good. you guys have some awful opinions at times. That's okay. Does that have to do with what I just said about Nynaeve?
Yeah, because if it does, tell us in the chat.
Because Lan and Nynaeve are perfect.
No, they are. I'm just saying sometimes she makes me cringe. Now, but let's jump to what I was about to say. Like, it is kind of a perfect balance of Nynaeve just being the over the top, little too aggressive, little abrasive, whatever. And, you know, they're taken aback and they're like, what? And then Elaine, when she does her more polished, respectful kind of approach, it's very well accepted. Mostly cool. That means that also equals somewhat not cool.
Hey, I'll take
which
it.
I'm okay with that.
I know. I was gonna say,
yeah. I've heard words. Yeah, man, that's just like your opinion, man. Yeah, man. Yeah,
that's your opinion.
The dude abides.
Great movie.
That's fair.
Yeah. So yeah. So they get on board and they start exchanging. A little bit of knowledge here and there. That's when Brigitte, I think, says her secret scroll phrase. And they're like, stop and like, huh? And then they immediately, the sea folk are just like, Elaine and Nynaeve, you guys aren't really Aes Sedai. You're not old enough. Psh, whatever. You know, and Brigitte's like, well, I'm not. Never said I was. And Aviana's like, I'm not either. I'm Aiel. They're like, oh, you're dressed differently.
I didn't expect you to be
like, and like they murmur to each other, but she can touch the swords, I can tell.
Yeah.
Well, the one they have a windfinder in there, right? And like they kind of give the look at her and she flat out says, she's like, three of them can channel, those two plus her. Yeah. And by the way, like they're kind of like the most powerful channelers I've ever run into. So
by the nine winds and Stormbringer's beard, I'm not, Brigitte replied. Sometimes she said things that even Elaine and Nynaeve seemed to not understand, but the white-haired woman jumped as if she had been goosed and stared at a long moment before turning. And you are not Aes Sedai either, grated the woman. Aviana's like, nah, I'm Avienda of the Nine Valleys, Sept of the Tardan Aiel. And the woman gave twice the start as she did for Brigitte. You are not Garb in the expected, girl. And so, I really love that moment where you have this older woman. I can kind of see her hunched over her table, and then she's like, like she had woken up some lady bits that no longer worked or something.
Yeah. And then they get really excited about the Tarangriel. They're like, yeah, we're looking for this Tarangriel that controls weather. Goes, what does it look like? They're like, I mean, it's a bowl of clouds, or like the bowl of winds.
Like, well, it really doesn't have a name that we know of. Well, that's got to be it. Well, then she changes tunes real quick. Yeah. It's then she turns to the guy that's listens kind of to charge. Her. I won't say works for her, but also in charge.
That's her hubby.
Yeah, but the relationship is interesting. It's a partner, but they have very different roles. Mm-hmm. But they both take turns telling each other what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Like they both have,
and then she gets her way. Say. That's not just like a husband.
But she listens to what he says. But then also she gets her, I won't say yet where the balance is. It feels fairly balanced, but in a very unfamiliar way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if we learn more about them, my opinions will change, but
yeah,
it's unique. Anyways, it works.
So yeah, the sea folk are really excited about this because apparently this was something that they knew about that was lost a long time ago. And it's part of their, I'm not sure they've been looking for it, but I don't know if it's part of the prophecies because they're really secretive about all this. They are looking for the Qor'mor, which is Rand. They do have their own prophecies, you know, as well. Their culture does, and you know, and they get down to kind of, all right, let's make a bargain. Then it's like, well, the real bargain's actually with Rand, but we can make kind of something between us.
Yeah. What if, like, before this bowl was lost, their people were insanely powerful?
I believe it. Like, that was kind of my thought.
That's like their focus. They could do the wind. They could do the weather. If they had that bowl, they were probably some badasses.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought. I'm right there with you. I felt like the emphasis on the bowl being so important that she snaps at her friend, like, tell all the 12 wayfinders and their
mistresses or whatever to hurry up and get here, or else we yank them up by the bootstraps and
all hands
on right deck. Now. Like, we have to find this, and it's here in this city. So let's get moving. Like, the sea folk are ready to go literally to town to find this thing.
When you get the all hands order, man, that's you know, talk about pucker factor. You get that your asshole puckers up, you know, it's time to go.
it doesn't matter where you are. So just relating to my time in the military, we've had those, you know, I'm in the gym in my little bit of time off, and somebody runs in and be like, hey, you got to get in the talk right now. Like, what we could possibly need me for? It was like, well, it's not just you, it literally everybody right now. When you go there, you know something serious is about to happen. Even when I was in Wisconsin if you've been listening, you know what I was there for with the Afghan refugee thing, not in a combat situation, but still we had a couple of times where it was hey, everybody right now, hop on the bus. This is an all hands sort of thing. In those situations, you're like, all right, everything about our daily routine, everything is changing right now. At a minimum, shit's about to hit the fan. Like, the whole mission's changing. So that's the vibe I got when she gave it. And that's why I was like, well, this is significant. But then it threw me for a loop that immediately afterwards, they're like, all right, now let's discuss terms of this arrangement. And clearly we get to set the terms. I mean, you just kind of showed your hand that, like, you're all in for this. Like, this is very important to you.
Right.
But still, your culture and like everything you've been doing for the past hundred thousands of years, whatever, is still coming into play. And you're like, well, let me see what I could get out of this situation. Let me make sure this works in my favor. Like, you just
kind of ruined it for yourself. But
right. Yeah. I don't know. It was funny. Yeah. And yeah. I think that our lady friends kind of recognized that. And they're like, wait a minute. You just got all excited. And now you want to discuss terms? What the hell's going on here?
Yeah. And that's kind of how we end this chapter, though.
Mm-hmm. You're like, Nynaeve's like, the terms are, you get to fucking come with us. What do you mean terms?
Yeah. They were way outclassed. They're just like, we have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Elaine's trying to politic it. Brigitte realizes that what she said gave herself away. Like, she has no good explanation for how she knows what she said.
Yeah.
So she's just sitting there sweating, and they're like, Oh, so that was the question of Brigitte.
Yeah.
It wasn't, how do you know? It was immediately, when did you spend time with us?
Yeah.
Because there's no way you know that.
The
question
for the Aes Sedai was, who was the treacherous traitor that gave you our secret? Because she owes us some time, essentially.
And it's a matter of needing or wanting, and who wants it more. And really, that's who has the upper hand in negotiation. Like once someone doesn't need it as much, you have the upper hand. Like,
yeah,
if that card gets played out there, and it's true with like business negotiations. One of my mentors, like, one of his biggest acquisitions he ever had in buying a business, they sent a young guy in, and like halfway through the negotiations, the guy says, listen, if I don't make a deal today, they told me I'm fired. I was like, well, then this is how we're going to make this deal happen then. And you're going to go back, and this is how it's going to be. You just lost this entire negotiation. And you got a crappy deal. Thank you.
I don't remember what it was, but early on. Oh, no. Remember, there was the lady across the street from your parents. I helped clean out her garage. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I ended up buying the Mustang from. Her husband had passed away, so I helped her clean up a lot of stuff and organize whatever. But I just happened to be talking to your dad because he's across the street. Like, I was like, I don't know, what do I do? I don't want a lowballer, an offender, or whatever. She told me to come up with the number. He said, no, never make the first offer. Whatever you got to do in the conversation, let her make the first offer. In your mind, you already know what you can and can't do, right? Or what you're willing to or not willing to do. Let them make the first offer, because it's either going to be way in your favor or you still find a way to get in the zone of what you're comfortable with.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, like, this was a huge thing for us. So when I got really into sailing, my dad went to buy a used boat. And I remember being really offended as a kid because he went to go look at the boat. And then when he could negotiate, he made us go wait in the car and not be there either way. And I was so offended by it. And later in life, now I understand, like, if your kid's there, you've lost the negotiation, because
Dad, this is perfect. I
this
want
is perfect.
It.
I want to display whatever price. Yeah, yeah. It's like, get away the car. Yeah. I'm telling to talk to him, just me and him. Like, and it makes sense. But as a kid, I didn't understand it all. I'm like, why can't I be there? Like, why can't I? Like, because you are.
I'm old enough to hear this conversation. I'm going to be the one sailing it. I should know how much it's worth.
Yeah.
No. No.
Sir. Well,
no.
Go away. I just sold. There's a car I bought and fixed up for Ryder, and I just sold it because for reasons he's not driving right now. We won't get into that. And I ended up selling it to this guy that was buying it for his daughter. It was her first car. And so when they both showed up and he was going around, you know, popping the hood, kicking the tires, whatever, da da da. And so I was like, man, he's really getting all the nuts and bolts of this. So I just turned to her and I was like, do you have your license? She was like, yeah. I was like, do you want to drive it? She goes, you'd be okay with me driving it? And I was like, yeah, is your dad okay with that? And he was like, well, you know, it's going to be for her, so I guess she should. And when she gets in there, like, the first thing I do is turn up the radio, put on some good music. I put in a new deck and all new speakers in there, which sounded nice. In a used car, you need a good sound system, so when something's making a funny noise, you can just turn up the volume. Anyways, yeah, I got her behind the wheel, got all the gizmos and gadgets working, and once she was sold, I knew I sold her.
He looked at you, he was like, you bastard.
Yeah.
She was like, Daddy, give him his money so we can leave. Like,
this is the one I want, Dad.
Anyways. Yep. So that's what we end with, the terms.
I almost had that car sold for you myself, actually.
I ended up letting it go for, if they'd have moved quick, I let it go for $4,000. And they probably could have turned around and sold it for $5,000. If I'd have been patient, I could have got $5,000 or $5,500 for it.
Oh yeah.
I was itching to get rid of it though.
Especially right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Anywho.
Yeah. Anything
in
else?
Conclusion with this chapter, Nynaeve is annoying.
Oh, Nynaeve's awesome.
Take that, chat. I mean, right now. I also recognize that she's done some pretty awesome, amazing things and will probably do more amazing things. But sometimes, oh gosh, sometimes I'm like, please stop.
Yeah. I mean, there's a very passionate fandom for Nynaeve, and there are actually people that hate Nynaeve too, even though the people that are passionate about Nynaeve will get really upset about the people that don't like.
Don't interpret what I'm saying that I hate Nynaeve. That is not the case. But sometimes I cringe when she speaks. you know that getting embarrassed for other people?
It's okay. Like, Ian cringes most times I speak in public when we're together. So it's fun, guys.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
you're pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're no Nynaeve.
Yeah. Anything else for this chapter before we move on?
Nah.
All right. Chapter 14, White Plumes. Some white plumes.
We got ourselves a new Pope.
Nice. Dice. Yeah. So, dice are the chapter symbol, and we start with gambling. We're at a horse race. Matt's out there doing some gambling. Bet on the ponies. Because he knows horse flesh.
He does, but he's taken his talent and his knowledge and his gambling risk a little too far.
Okay.
How are you going to take Ollie and throw him in a fucking pod race, and you don't even know if he's got Jedi reflexes? I mean, this ain't little Anakin. It's Ollie. Like, you just assume your Tavirinus is going to, like, spread out and envelop him, and he's going to be fine in this race?
Yeah.
It's kind of messed up.
I mean,
not a huge fan of him taking the risk with Ollie.
Yeah. Chris thoughts on making Ollie all the bets on Oliver.
Hey, I thought that was the best thing. Like, I was like, look at him putting his money where his mouth is. That is his ward.
Child endangerment. It's a bit reckless. How much training has Ollie had? We're just fast forwarding. If I had a little montage of all the training Matt gave him, so like Ollie like was just bound to do great things, I'd be okay with it.
Tavirin.
But Ollie's not.
But Ollie's with the Tavirin. He is the adopted son of Tavirin.
So I could just be bros with Rand, hanging out with him, be like, Rand, what up? I'm gonna go jump off this building, landed in a haystack, I'm fine.
Yeah.
No, that's not how that works.
I mean, it all rubs off on
him. Because what if the pattern needed you to splat so that Rand can do great things?
Boy, didn't you say he was somebody special? Aren't you the one that's putting money on him to be the reanimation of Brigitte's husband, hubby. Even though I don't agree? Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well, no. So in that context, I mean, it's pretty bad.
Where your mouth is, and say this is nothing for him.
All right, I'm putting all my money on Ollie.
Many wars. Okay,
like Matt. I'm trying to look at it from the perspective of decision making by Matt. Was it a responsible decision?
A responsible father.
The book he's not happy about it at all. Like,
you wouldn't put your son.
He just comes up there. And is like, I'm putting on black, and they're like,
everything,
sir.
Like everything. Everything.
That's not even putting all black. I'm putting all on double zeros in the book. Like,
yeah.
What? Yeah. Not pleased by the size of the deck.
To be fair, too, Matt knows horses.
That's what I'm saying.
He can look at a horse's rear end and know exactly how well it's going to do in a race.
Mm. Yeah.
He's like the Gantsoff. He's going to lose. That one's got a crooked smile. He can't get right. He's been licking that salt too long. He's not hydrated enough.
Yeah. And wasn't there some talk before about like the different types of gambling? There's certain versions where he just wins no matter what. And then there's other versions of gambling where
the dice might roll.
Yeah. Well, like with the dice, it's almost guaranteed he's going to mm-hmm. win like 99% of the time.
Right.
But so there's anything, other factors in horse racing.
He mentions that horse racing, he's not nearly as good at because there's not as much chance.
Right, I thought he mentioned that. So, like, this is a balance of his luck, but also his knowledge
and his faith in the little boy.
Mm-hmm. See, that's like where.
Pounds.
All right, how do I explain this? I don't think Matt has any sort of special faith in Ollie, other than his size makes him perfect for it.
Agreed.
I do think there's something special about Ollie, but the reason I judge Matt negatively here is Matt doesn't know there's something special about him. He's taking a risk with Ollie.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Ollie's just an urchin that he pulled off the street. So if something happens, it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I mean, not quite that, but it's a little careless.
That cat makes sleep look so easy. Look at her.
And then, also, during all this, Matt starts getting distracted, and I'll see one of his guys on the right hand is like, so they're trying to get his attention. He's like, dude, they're lining up. They're about to go, man. You bet all this money. And I'm just like, and he's off there like thinking. He's like, I placed watches by the palace. How are Nynaeve and Elaine getting people past them? I don't understand. I'm like, wait, that woman over there, she looks familiar. Where do I know her from? It's like, dude, the horse race. He's like, but there's someone over there. They recognize her.
Okay, pause. Chris, how do you think Nynaeve and Elaine are getting by without any of Matt or Matt's men noticing them?
Incantations. They're just changing their appearance.
Okay. I didn't know if you went straight to that. That's what I was thinking.
We found that out, though.
But I mean, as you were reading, is that straight where you went?
Yeah, that's where I went.
Okay. Because
either that or they were just
going invisible. I don't think. They had their cloak, so. Right, had to be something like that extreme because I put a lot of
cloak.
I put a lot of faith in not just Matt's abilities, but again, the people he really trusts, and how he vetted them. Like these people, they see what there is.
Well, he even has Julian and Tom watching them. Like,
right, but Julian and Tom are more dedicated to Nynaeve and Elaine, are Matt being involved.
But they're more dedicated to keeping them safe, not what they're doing.
That's true.
If it means that Matt snatches them up, puts them in barrels, and rolls them to home, then let them put them in barrels and roll them home.
Yeah. I just assumed they had to be changing their appearance or doing something to make it very hard to see that they were leaving.
Yeah.
Not just tiptoeing around. I feel like you said, Tom, Julian, but then also Matt and all his people, they will notice tiptoeing. You got to be better than that.
Hide in plain sight. Yeah. Anyways, so he sees this woman and recognizes her. And who would have thought that we had this person showing back up?
Some woman dead 1,000 years or more, The light knew that happened often enough. Even Brigitte sometimes tickled his memory. Well, there were four women here, and now who had his brain tied in knots? They were what was important. Nynaeve and the others were avoiding him as if he had fleas. Five times he had been into the palace, and the once they had seen him, it was to tell him they were too busy to see him. They thought he would interfere with what they were up to. They were not complete fools, idiots often. And then you have this lady who he's like, I can't place her.
Can't. He finally does.
Place her, and then...
Well, he places her with a straight flashback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you guys remember that from Eye of the World? I know it's years ago.
I do, but I have questions.
Okay.
Chris, do you have something before I get into my questions?
Bran still stay there moaning in the straw, even if the fever seemed gone. At least he was not shouting anymore at people who were not there. Matt eyed the woman suspiciously as she knelt beside Rand. Maybe she could help us, as she claimed, but Matt did not trust her as he once had. What was a fine lady like this doing in a village stable, caressing the ruby tilted hilt of the dagger hidden by his coat? He wondered why he had ever trusted. It never paid. Never. I didn't realize when I was listening to this that he was having a flashback. I was like, when did the dagger pop back up in all this?
Yeah. Right. It took me two or three go rounds to
through the list. I thought that she had the dagger and she was coming at him.
Well, she had a dagger back
then. A dagger, yes. Right.
Not the dagger.
My first listen, I thought the same thing. I was like, how the fuck is this padded fame? What the hell? Yeah,
that was my thought. Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one. That's why I'm glad I went back and actually read it. I was like, wait. This is a memory. Okay.
Right.
Cool. Yep.
So what were you going to say?
Questions.
Don't worry, Chris. I will make myself look extra stupid here. But Eye of the World was years ago.
It was.
Literally.
Were we absolutely certain that she was a bad guy, or did she confess?
She confessed she was a dark friend.
Oh, we knew. Okay. She said it, yeah.
Okay, well then, I'm glad I asked that first before I... Mm-hmm. Said anything else?
Yeah, it was in the stable on the road to Camelin.
She was in a beautiful dress, and she was like, "You guys will submit to me." And she
pulled out a knife
and
stabbed Matt. Jumped out of the way and it stabbed the wood, and it's hissed. And
so I guess I'll say the rest. Just from the flashback we have here. I thought for a second, I was like, wait, she was over Rand just commenting on how like he's, you know, pretty sick, whatever. But then she attacked Matt. Maybe she attacked Matt because of his connection to the dagger, not necessarily because she's bad. So then I was like, what?
No, I think she mentions that the Eyeless will be here soon. You guys need to come with me. Like,
she did. That's,
right. So definite dark friend-ishness. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. All right. Well, then never mind. Forget I said that.
So
she's bad.
Yeah, sees her in the distance, and Oliver wins. And Matt's like, "Okay, cool. I'm following this woman. See you guys later. Go collect her winnings."
Everybody else is like, "We gotta get the winnings now. Go track them down. They're not gonna pay us. It's so much money." And he's like,
"Here's the little thingy." He's like, "I have my dice in my pocket. I can make all this money back up in a night." Like,
I'm not worried about any of this.
Threatened about something I ain't worried about. But y'all go ahead and have fun with that.
Yeah.
But make sure you bring my money. Bitch, yeah, have my money.
So, like, he starts.
I'm gonna need about tree fitty.
So, starts following her through the crowd, and she's wearing that, you know, the white plumes, you know, feathers in her hats, so you can see her. She stands out, and
so there's an interesting question in the chat, and I can't remember if she survived the encounter or not. It was so long ago.
Yeah, they locked her in the stable and left. They didn't kill her.
Yeah, but wasn't locked her in the stable? Set on fire? Or?
No. They took the dagger from her and then threw it in the water, and it hissed when it hit the water.
Yeah, that's
right. As they're walking away from the village, but they locked her in the stable. And
I remember that part. What was with the dagger hissing, though?
It was just enchanted. It
smoked, too, when it touched it was enchanted or some kind of...
It boiled the water.
Yeah, it boiled the water when it threw in the water.
That's intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that early on, neither one of them had, you know, were murdering folks.
Yeah, just locked in the stable.
Especially women. Yeah.
No,
we would have remembered if Rand had killed her, because yeah, Rand, I think they did. Rand and women dying is
I think that's why they couldn't kill her. Yeah, I believe they did. Like, they would not kill her, even though Matt was like, "Well, shouldn't we do it?"
Yeah.
No. But at the same time, we should.
Yeah. So he's following her. She stops at one of the shops, so he doesn't want to get too close. So he kind of ducks into like this little merchant that's selling jewelry, and like, you know, puts on a signet ring, and you know, he's like just trying to act all cool, and he's like my, and the guy's trying to sell it to him. Yeah, my lord, you know, this is the finest jewelry, you know, all sort of stuff. And he's like, yeah, whatever, not really paying attention to him.
For a minute, I thought this was a trick.
Yeah,
because the ring wouldn't come off. I was like, oh, is it like a poison ring that like had like something in it, or is it enchanted, or like,
yeah, you never know thoughts. What's coming next chapter. Could it, yeah, could be still, when, but
like this would be the third enchanted item that he comes in like contact with. But oh,
really?
My
overpaid her.
Yeah, she ain't no Pater.
She ain't no Pater.
I'm gonna do a mix-up costume. I'm gonna be Pater, but with a hat with a giant plume. But it's gonna be an insane plume. The plume will be as tall as I am, so it'll be a 4-foot plume coming off the top of my hat. That's gonna be my costume for day one at JordaCon this year.
Nice. Pater sounds awesome. Giant plume.
Why is she your favorite bar strider? Tell us.
Yeah. Wait. Go a little deeper.
Enlighten us.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is she your favorite dark friend?
Yeah. <It's all better. laughs> Spoilers through book 10. Go ahead. Just wanna,
cause she lives and Pater dies.
Pater's not dead. We no. only we don't know for certain that Pater's dead.
Her answer is sure.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, he's forced to buy the signet ring, which he just throws money. He's like, this is too much. I don't care. Keep the change.
And the moment he pays, that's when it slips off his finger.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
That's when I started thinking, like you did, were saying, Chris. I was like, wait, is there actually something?
Did you notice what was on the ring? Here?
What's that?
A black stone.
But what the inscription was, there's actually stuff like engraved onto it.
Ooh, I breezed past that.
Yeah, the ring is shown to have a fox bothering some ravens.
Oh.
Oh.
Interesting. It might be a Tarot. Interesting. Girl.
Maybe that's why it's stuck to him.
Yeah.
Maybe it goes with the necklace he's wearing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a pair. Maybe it's part of a set.
I mean, he has
a fox head medallion, and there's ravens on his spear he got also from the foxes.
Yeah.
Wait, what if he keeps collecting all these different items and he keeps powering up?
That's
like,
what I'm
maybe thinking. He's not a channeler, but he gets like the breastplate of this, the helmet of that, the spear of whatchamacallit, the necklace of Dumaflagey, the toe ring of discombobulated thingamajiggers.
I agree. I think he's picking up a great collection.
Yeah.
Maybe that's he awesome. Is a dark friend.
Yeah. So he loses her for a little bit. Sees her just in time to see her go into a palace. But just at that point too, a white cloak comes through, parting the sea like they do, like assuming everyone is going to move out of the way for them, which they do. And watches the white cloak go in there as well.
And the whole time Matt's trying to find, as he's chasing her, what am I going to do once I get a hold of her?
Right.
It's always the question running in his mind. He's like, if I cause a scene, then I cause a scene against myself too. You know, maybe I report her. Maybe I do this. Maybe I do that. And so he's standing there watching her going. He's like, God, I wish I knew whose house that was. And then some random bum's like, oh, that's the white cloak's house. The main inquisitor. So there's our Pad and Fane connection.
Ooh.
She is in leagues with Pad and Fane in some way.
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe. So Matt's trying to put this together about white cloaks and dark friends. What are they doing together?
Pad and Fane.
The nasty.
Oh, yeah. Pad and Fane has been manipulating the white cloaks through a dark friend for some time now. So I can see all this kind of tying together now.
Yeah. Well, the white cloak we see is Jacob Carradine. I mean, that's what they say. I mean,
yeah.
And Jacob Carrington is the man who calls himself Boris. We already know this.
Yes.
He is the dark friend from the dark beginning friend. Of book two. So he's a dark friend, White Cloak.
But in the dark friend social, none of them were supposed to know each other.
Right.
They're supposed to be acting very independently.
Right.
Well, she wasn't at the social, was she?
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
But I mean,
she mentioned.
She could fit the description of some of the folks that were there.
Just because they don't know each other.
You also got to think that the Dark Friend Social is being led by Ishmael, who is not with us.
Right. Not there anymore.
So
no, the dark
one. Who's leading them now? It might be different rules, different. I mean,
I say the dark one is actively working to bring his people together and get them motivated in the right direction. So
yeah, like Forsaken's controlling them now.
Okay. Well, Alan, from the you can read and find out, buddy.
Okay. It's Lamphere. That when I first read about this woman, I thought it was Lamphere. I got excited. I don't know about you. But they kept drawing attention to the random mysterious woman. Like, the only woman they put that much emphasis on this entire book series was Lamphere. So is she back?
I mean, it'll catch me off guard if it's her. I'm like 3 or 4 pages before the mention of Lamphere, I already start getting kind of a semi, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I just know it's coming. And then when I turn that page, it's like bam. And I didn't quite get that here. So
And so what do you think about this old man you run into? Matt thinks he knows him.
He's a problem.
Okay. He's a problem. Okay. Do you think he's a dark friend?
No, I just think he's out of place.
The options are too great. Okay. One, does Matt know him from this current lifetime? That could already be kind of bad. If Matt recognizes him and it's from the new memories he's getting from previous lifetimes, that's really bad because it narrows down who it could be and it's probably really bad.
Okay.
But he recognized a stranger, somebody that had been with the woman.
Mm.
But the old dude, a
man with a hooked nose, that old man had been
oh wait no that's
standing not too far from the woman who had just gone into the rented palace. So whether he knew her
that's
or
more
not,
death that's Pat and Fane. Wait, what does Pat and Fane go by when he's with the White Cloaks?
Something warm.
That's who this is gonna be.
You think so?
I think so.
So it's like he's doing a Javar move.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Yep.
Ordeath, which means something warm. Sorry, Ordeath, in the old tongue means something. Yeah.
So maybe this is Pat and Fane, little faceless man kind of. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So you think it's something? You think he is Pat and Fane, or you think it's something to do with Pat and Fane?
He's saying he thinks it is Pat and Fane.
Right. I'm just kind of making this up now. I wasn't necessarily thinking that when I was reading, but listening to some of the things Chris is theorizing and whatever, I could feel that connection. So, and don't they specifically talk about the nose when they talk about this old guy?
Yeah, you're right. A crooked nose, a hooked nose.
Yeah, that's when I really started thinking the Pat and Fane thing.
Okay.
And we know, like you said, he has his hooks in with the White Cloaks.
I will say he has showed up in previous books. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, wow. Let me skim back the last couple years and see what I come up with.
That's all I'm going to say. So, yeah. Maybe he's the guy from the tavern who recognized what Matt said about the daughter of the Nine Moons. Okay.
This is going to take us so long, and my memory's so shit. I feel like after the last battle of the last book, we're going to have like a final episode to kind of recap and summarize. And it's going to be a panel of like Alan and some of our folks that have just been with us forever that know everything about these books. And Chris, they're going to keep going, hey, you know how in the final battle when he said this, do you remember in book 2, page 7, when they mention this, and we'll be like, no, I don't remember that. And it's gonna be, there's gonna be like 1,000 references all along the way that we've like totally forgotten.
Something super obscure. Yeah, I agree.
Remember when he winked in Eye of the World and the tree swayed a little bit?
It does all come back when you do a reread and you're like, holy crap.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, it's all there. It's very obvious. But it's not. It's good writing. The chapter ends with the Dark Friend going into the palace, Matt talking to the old man and trying to figure out, well, how the hell am I supposed to do now? Kind of thing. Like, can't go in there. Why are they together? Like, the plot thickens.
Do we have any Forsaken worries here? I didn't get that vibe, but I've been wrong before. Do you have any Forsaken vibes here, Chris?
No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, nothing like that jumped out at me.
Okay. Just Pat and Fing. It's the only one that came to mind. Yeah, and I may be wrong, but Pat and Fing keeps coming to my mind.
Okay. If you're not right, it was a very solid guess. Because I wasn't even totally thinking that, but once you said it, I was like, ooh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Feels right.
Yeah. So that's how we end this chapter. It's not too. Yeah,
but more questions. All right.
More questions. Chapter actually with the dice starting to rattle in Matt's head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was a cruel way to end the chapter because you just know something's about to go down. Something serious is about to happen.
Wait.
Now,
what if this chick is his 9 moons and a third planet rock from the sun with the asteroid belt lady?
I can't believe that.
It's about to go down.
It is. It's not. That's not her.
Yeah, it's only because I can't imagine Matt getting with some chick that has a giant plume off of her hat.
No, right? Matt's coming with the sea woman. We know this.
Okay.
Lady of the sea. Somebody that can rock the boat real well. Somebody that can ride the wave.
Yep. Oh, so my real question. Back to how we're just being negligent and just borderline abusive with our parenting of Ollie, because let's be honest, Matt is playing the role of a parent, whether he wants to or not. What is Ollie's cut? They just made a shit ton of money. How much that goes to Ollie?
Sleep, and he gets food in his mouth. Don't you question me.
But if in Matt's mind, he never really risked any money because he knew he could take his little seed money and win it all back in some dice later, then what was he actually risking? He was risking the horse and he was risking Ollie. So who should get the most of those winnings? That horse should be able to eat the best grain and get massages and cleaned up and have its teeth brushed every single day. And Ollie,
thank you. How
should get about 90% of that board. The winnings.
According to the horse jockey, easyhorsebetting.com, jockeys are usually paid only if the horse gets first, second, or third place. And their compensation is usually 10% for first place, 2% for second place, and 0.5% to 1% for third place of the total purse winnings.
Oh, wow.
But Matt apart from knows that, you usually get $100.
You should get $100 risking per any money. Ride. Yeah. If they don't place, you still get $100 just to ride.
That's lame.
That is nothing. That's in today's economy. That's like 2 Big Macs and a giant tea.
I know. Isn't that so shitty?
That's 3.5 eggs.
Yeah.
That's 3 whole eggs and 1 egg white.
Economics.
the average jockey earns around $40,000 per year, but that sometimes they'll ride multiple races in a day.
Ollie's also, 7 years old? 8 years old, tops.
40K for 8-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, whatever.
And Matt's risking money. His life. Oh, by the way, when they reach the turnaround point, since he was in the lead, sometimes the people that are trailing will slash at them, you know, just to F at them.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
I mean, he can go get another one off the street.
Yeah.
Matt does care. We're joking. We know Matt's got a kind heart.
Yeah, but I wish it was discussed.
Well, Matt's not the one that put him on the horse either. No, that was the guy sitting at the table with Matt.
Matt was Oliver like, loves horses. His payment is to spend time with the horses.
Yeah, he gets the thing, he gets the mutt, the yuck, and gets to feed them. And...
If you love doing it, you don't have to get paid to do it. It's like the girl that sat on the lifeguard stand when we were kids, and she had a lifeguard. Yeah. Well, that's because she was super introvert and we were just assholes. And like
pretty much.
Like, hey, you want to get off the lifeguard? It's like, oh, I guess she's not talking. Okay, she'll stay up there.
If you want to stay up there, I'll get back in the pool and swim and go off the diving board. But when you're ready, I'll come relieve you. She's like, I have 6 more hours in my shift. I'll just stay here. I'm like, gotcha. All right. I'm going to get some French fries from the cabana. You want some?
So bad.
It's your turn in the spades tournament. Are you playing? No, I forfeit. I'm going to stay right here. All right.
Yeah. Oh, the spades tournaments. That was fun.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. That wasn't even a real job. I can't believe they paid us to do that.
Got paid good money.
It was good money. Anyways. Yeah. So anything else from these chapters that we missed?
No. They were really good chapters, yes. But there was a lot of just personal insights in these chapters. We got a good look into Avi and his mind for the first time, we know. And then we got a great look into Matt processing some more of those old memories. Because even when that happened, he hadn't run into the dagger yet at that time. But not too long after, he was starting to lose his mind because he did it with the dagger. So all that's kind of just fuzzy to him. So that level of recall is really good.
Yep.
And he's also piecing out the fact that he knows that some of his memories aren't altogether his. Yeah, they got paid to play spades.
Paid to play spades. I got paid to go off the diving board. I got paid to drink. I got paid to drink. I got paid to shoot a lemon 320 yards.
How long? Shoot potatoes at me.
All they were doing was lifeguard.
How long was the first hole?
Oh, we barely lifeguarded.
Was it what? Was it 320, 340?
340 yards, yeah.
On the first par four, we launched a lemon from the tee box and hit the green.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Awesome.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty good.
Got paid for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paid for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Got paid for playing greasy watermelon.
Yeah. Yeah. We were really bad. We would just play spades all day long.
Had a great tan.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time.
That's fun.
I actually drained the entire pool. I was helping to clean up after a storm and I was the last one to leave. So we had vacuumed a bunch of sand. So I put it on backwash. And then while I was in there switching all the valves back, well, supposed to be switching all the valves back, I got a phone call from somebody and they're like, oh, we're meeting up at blah, blah, blah. We're going to do dinner, get some drinks. I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you there. And I turned the filter back on. I still had the valve set to backwash. This is the downstairs pool. There is like an Olympic sized pool. I mean, it's massive, the amount of water it holds. When I came back in the next morning to open, it was empty. The entire pool was empty.
You know, it's thousands of dollars to cost to fill it.
Right. The amount of money that is spent on water to refill it is that's as much as I got paid in 2 summers of working there. They were like, Ian, what happened? And all I could say was, oops.
Oops.
I think I messed up.
They had a restaurant at the pool that had, it was called the Cabana, and it was like a deck up high. And if you move the chairs the right way, it sounded like thunder. So we would send a lifeguard up there to move the chairs. We're like, oh, thunder. If there's a cloud in the sky, there's like one cloud. Like, oh, lightning storm coming. Everybody out of the pool. We're closing.
That was before all these apps where it shows you where the lightning strikes are. Oh, yeah, so they couldn't question it. Once you hear it, man.
Yeah.
We called. And yes, for all of that, we got paid.
Yes. Oh, because we'd sit there and hang out until the storm, air quotes, blows over.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were horrible.
Also, the torpedoes that you could have in the pool, the large ones, not the minis, the large ones also fit inside of a 2-inch barrel of a potato gun. Mm-hmm. But in order for it to fire properly, you're going to want to lube it up just a little bit, because that rubber on the PVC, it'll stick. But you can shoot those out of a 2-inch barrel potato gun.
Mm-hmm. They go really fast.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all we have for these chapters. So, favorite character?
Ollie. He put it all on the line. He risked it for the biscuit. He was he was the man.
I'm going to have to go with Avienda. I like the fact that she is finally starting to sort through her emotions for Rand and come to terms with sharing him and then going through new experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very unideal of her, she actually asked for a bucket so she could upchuck.
Mm-hmm. Very unideal. Being on a large body of water, wearing like silk dresses, whatever. Following somebody else's lead, period.
Yeah.
Upchucking in a bucket. A lot of new stuff for her.
Mine would have to go with Nynaeve. Just for such a strong character in this chapter, these chapters, you know.
I'm actually relieved that you chose her.
And Talmanis.
I thought you were going to go with that.
No. Of course, Talmanis. He's always there in our hearts.
Get out of here. No, really, get out of here. Go.
Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah, so how can we be found? TheLittleReads.com. It's a website that you can go to on the interwebs, and you can click on things called links. And they bring you to all sorts of cool places, like our Discord server that people have been joining recently. So it's been cool seeing new people joining. I need to post more on there. I posted some eggs the other day to show how bougie I was having breakfast with eggs.
it was a bougie breakfast.
Yeah. It was
eggs, plural, like more than one?
It was actually dinner. It was leftover eggs with...
You made so many eggs, you had leftovers?
Yeah. Get out of here. We bought eggs from the restaurant and had leftovers.
Yeah, after I fill my gas tank, I spray some on the ground just to be like, whatever.
In a pork chop. Eggs in a pork chop. That's my dinner. It was left overnight. I had some eggs, but I need to post more on there, all the cool stuff. I posted some on Patreon too the other day. I need to post more stuff, but join Discord. And if you're a first time reader listening to us, please feel free to join Discord and chat in the first time reader section. I love reading those, no matter what book you're on. Just post away. Just thoughts and what's going on and how you feel about what you're reading. And if you have questions, ask questions. We might not answer you, with a wrath though. But it's still fun. Also, you can support us in lots of ways. You can support us by listening to us. It's a great way to support us. We do get some ad revenue from that. And merchandise, buy our cool merch. We have some cool t-shirts. And even baby onesies and things like that, frosty mugs,
and shot glasses to go with the baby onesies.
Shot glasses to take the shots. And Patreon, Patreon's cool. We love our patrons.
We do
a lot. So
we appreciate y'all. Yeah, do we have any new ones to go around? Did I miss that?
No, not this week. Last week we did. This week, no.
That's all right. We're shouting out to Reversible Pony. Okay.
Yeah. And for our patrons at a certain tier, we will be doing some more live reactions soon. So that will be
happening. Yeah, we have
soon.
Warbreaker coming up.
Well, that's for everybody.
That too. Yeah.
We're doing Cosmere stuff too. So if you like Brand Sanderson stuff, we do that as well. So Cosmere.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. So we'll be finishing Warbreaker soon. And that's all I got for this week.
Until next time.
Peace.
Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you for listening to The Wheel Reads. See y'all next time.